Welcome to another That's a Dive. I'm Kyle Martino. Excited about today's pod. We've got three good topics. But before we get into the topics, just wanted to give you guys some love because you've given me love. The reviews have been great, and the reviews are important because that bumps us up. People can see it. I don't know how it works. I just know you got to keep doing that. And I'm going to read my three favorite that I've heard so far. This one, the title is Good Stuff, and it's from Ryan12948, which I think is the combination of his luggage. He says he knows his stuff and has killer hair, but you can't really tell that on a podcast, but I love that. Thank you so much. And then this one from SCKing1214. I haven't been this hooked to a podcast so early ever. Great content, great discussion. Kyle is easily one of the best soccer analysts on the planet, which I'm realizing that has to be my mother that wrote that review. Thanks, Mom. Thanks for listening to the pod. And then the last one and the most important one, the title is Hey George, You Owe Me $50. Not really sure what that's all about. Randy Dandelion says, it's about time NBC Sports put producer Jorge on the mic. Quit trying to hide his light underneath a bushel basket. Kyle is okay, I guess. You owe someone $50?
Not quite sure if that's some fantasy baseball reference. I don't know if we really want to get into that today, but
PJ owes money all over town. So we're gonna do something fun with the reviews, so we can keep them coming along. I used a movie reference on air the other day, talking about Arsene Wenger, and compared it to the Truman Show, and it's the Wenger Show at Arsenal Football Club, where they're creating a world, an artificial world for his whims and his desires. Give me in your reviews this week your best movie reference, and I'm gonna pick out my favorites, and don't say which movie it's from, and I'll try to guess which movie as well. So we'll have fun with that on the next pod. We also have a new feature on the pod. I mean, the reviews are going so well, our budget's up, and we have a new feature. PJ, what's our new feature?
It's pretty quite simple. Just we're gonna add a little. I'm gonna add a new role, I guess, for myself, sort of a referee.
You're gonna be able to handle that?
It might be a lot. We'll find out.
Okay,
we'll see how long it lasts. Basically, we'll 10 minutes for every topic. That's our goal here. So when we hit the 10-minute mark on each topic, there will be a whistle that will come in to try and shut Kyle up. I don't know if that's going to work.
Yeah, it's probably not going to work. They're doing everything they can to try to contain me. You can't contain me. All right, three topics this week. Zlat. Big Zlatan Ibrahimovic. How is he doing it at his age? He tells us his secret. The next topic, Lukaku, the beast, the leading goal scorer in the Premier League. Should he stay? Should he go? What should he do? And then the first topic we're going to get into today, big news recently about a World Cup bid, a tri-bid, Mexico, Canada, the United States, a joint bid for the 2026 World Cup. So there have been rumors about this for a while now. And when the rumors started to pick up steam, that the United States was going to go this route and join their neighbors, Mexico and Canada, in a joint bid for the 2026 World Cup, there were a lot of mixed reviews about that, and I would say probably predominantly negative ones. Most people were not happy about that. Most people didn't like that. My buddy Alexi got on air, I remember, for Fox, and saying, we don't need it. We can do this on our own.
So it's kind of selfish reasons almost, that we want it all for ourselves.
Yeah, and I understand that. I want it. You know, I want it for us. 1994 was incredible. The most successful World Cup that FIFA's ever had. Attendance, revenue. I mean, it was a monster. Imagine what it could be like now. Now that Major League Soccer has been going for a long time. The Premier League's so successful. The Bundesliga. We have Fox. We have BN. We have NBC. We have ESPN. There is such a larger appetite for the world's biggest tournament now. So, of course, the U.S. could handle it. Also, there's going to be a change. The 2026 World Cup is going to be the first World Cup with the expanded format, the 48-team format, which means 80 games. There aren't a lot of countries that can handle that sort of load. I mean, that's a lot of games. That's a lot of teams, a lot of facilities you need. And FIFA are pretty specific about what the requirements are to be able to put a bid in and for it to be successful and to put on the tournament. But let's back up a little bit. What's my opinion? My opinion before Sunil Gulati's announcement the other day, where he gave us a little more information, was this is a good thing. I like it. I was excited about it. I want to see that. we have such a remarkable rivalry going on, and also already a shared interest in the fact that Major League Soccer is split between the U.S. And Canada. So it makes sense in a lot of reasons. But then I reached out to someone at U.S. Soccer before the announcement to get a little bit more information. And what I was told on that phone call from someone in the know made me realize it is an absolute no-brainer. Absolute no-brainer to do this as a joint bid. And it'll only be the second time ever that there's been a joint bid. And the other joint bid was a joint World Cup with South Korea and Japan. And it was a success. Mm-hmm. It was a great World Cup. And so I really don't think this is kind of where FIFA wants to go in the joint bid sort of arena. But this one makes sense for them and for the U.S. in so many ways. And after Sunil's announcement, and now everyone knows what I had found out on the phone before that, which is why they're doing it and what it's going to look like. And for me, there are two major reasons why it makes sense. First is there were rumors that Mexico and Canada were going to go solo. And the way this whole thing works with trying to get the votes to get a World Cup, in order for any of the CONCACAF teams to be able to do it, you need a pretty unified front. You can't have another CONCACAF team going in because it robs you of votes. So, you know, it's think of any sort of political campaign. You need to get your party aligned. So if Mexico and U.S. went solo, they would hurt each other's chances of getting the World Cup. So there's that factor that joining together, if there was a real chance Mexico and Canada were going to try to go in on their own, increases the chances of now in a joint bid, all of them getting it. But if they all go solo, that greatly decreases the chances of any of them getting it. And the U.S. has the best chance of getting the World Cup on their own for the 94 World Cup and its success, for its ability to put on the tournament. I mean, tomorrow, if they needed to. So because of that, the U.S. has and I'll get into the format and the specifics of the bid. The U.S. has the strong position. So they really didn't need Canada and Mexico as much as Canada and Mexico needed them. That brings me on to my second point. Then why? Why do the joint bid outside of my first explanation about the votes? Why join Canada and Mexico if the U.S. has a great chance of getting it on their own? The reason why, and everyone I know, stick to sports, Martino, but in this one, you guys, you're not going to be able to say that because politics are intertwined in this. And the optics of giving the U.S. a World Cup aren't great. That's the reality. And that's not an opinion. That's something that has been communicated by FIFA. Let me find his name. It was the vice president, right? Wasn't it, of FIFA, president, who came out a while ago. This is at the beginning.
UEFA's president and a FIFA vice president.
That's right. And so this guy comes forward, and
Seferin is his name.
This is about Trump's comments when he was trying to get the travel ban put in place, and not even going back to Trump's comments about Mexico and his and Mexicans in his campaign that obviously don't look great for the optics of you know, the United States globally, but FIFA are trying to move away from the past, trying to move away from a corrupt past. I mean, that's the first thing that people were saying, the hypocrisy of why the political optics of this are relevant when Russia and Qatar are the ones that just won World Cup bids. The reason is that you're kind of hitting the nail on the head, but not realizing it when you make that criticism. It's because of Russia and Qatar and bids in the past that are being investigated, that are questions of bribes that don't look good on FIFA. Infantino, the new regime, so to speak, after Sepp Blatter, are trying to improve the public image of FIFA, trying to at least if not realistically and actually, at least appear to be moving away from a very corrupt past. So awarding the United States a World Cup after this sort of muddled last two bid processes where two countries got it and there are big question marks about it, there were hesitations there. And it was communicated by, as you said, the UEFA vice president, the FIFA guy, and also communicated not publicly to Sunil Gulati in U.S. soccer. I mean, these guys are smart enough to know that. And what tells me that communication came through from FIFA to Sunil Gulati is Sunil Gulati's first tweet right after the public announcement, which was this, at POTUS. He went at POTUS. Is fully supportive of our unified bid for the 2026 FIFA World Cup and especially pleased that Mexico is a part of it. So what Sunil said in his announcement and what this tweet states is that he got assurances from this administration that they wouldn't undercut this bid process by saying anything negative about involving Mexico in this process. So if there's the need to come out and clearly state that in the announcement and in the tweet, it's because FIFA had communicated to U.S. soccer that was something that was a deterrent. That was something that was a negative and was going to work against the United States. So basically, to summarize all of that, the U.S., and very smartly, in my opinion, outside of my belief that it was a good idea to begin with, but now with this knowledge, I think it makes absolute sense. The U.S. knew that they were going to increase their chances of getting the World Cup by going this way.
It sort of paints a picture to FIFA, probably, that it makes it seem a more open and inviting tournament when you have Mexico and Canada involved, I think, is kind of a
absolutely.
From the U.S. perspective, it's, we'll get everybody.
And that's part of Infantino's new sort of... His decree is that he wants to grow the game in places. And you know, FIFA's had the World Cup, or Mexico's had the World Cup twice. Mm-hmm. But Canada, a great ground to a very successful Women's World Cup to grow the game there. Now the format, I know I'm going to struggle with this 10-minute thing. I'm looking at the clock. It's staring down at me. I feel the whistle coming. So we might need some extra time on this first topic because it's a big one. But the format, right? The format of the World Cup, the U.S. will get 60 games of the 80 and then give 10 to Canada, 10 to Mexico, and the quarterfinals on will be exclusively in the United States.
And that's just the proposal right now. I don't think that's the official.
It could change, but that's agreed upon with Canada and Mexico before they put that bid. So basically, the U.S. would have an entire World Cup based on the current format. What is it, 64 games now?
It says, 80. So
I'm saying,
64.
They would have an entire World Cup in the U.S., And they would guarantee that by just going about it this way. There it is. PJ, can I just get a little extra time? Can I just 2 minutes to wrap this one up?
The format is important here.
Plus, we got to get used to the whistle. It's a new feature. It's surprising us a little bit. So let's just wrap it up real quick and say the idea makes sense on so many levels, but it makes sense on the most important level. Forget partisanship here, and try to put aside the political side of things, because I don't hide my political leanings. I tweet often about my thoughts and my feelings, my beliefs, but I respect those that don't share mine. And you know, if you have a valid argument, I want to hear it. But we should all be a part of the soccer party. The soccer party should all get together and see that this makes a lot of sense. And actually, I'm a bit surprised that Mexico and Canada would come along with this with how few games they get. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, the reason they're coming along is if they went into a battle with the United States for World Cup, there's no way they're going to beat the United States in that bid process. So it makes sense for all parties.
Just real quickly before we move on again, a bigger picture for FIFA with the expanded format. Mm-hmm. Does it make sense, not just with the 2026 World Cup, but going forward, that we're going to see a lot of these bids
joint
in the future
bids.
Be joint bids with three, maybe four. You know, Europe, you could do four or five countries, really.
Let's see how 80 games.
Yeah, it's a lot.
I mean, that's – forget do we like the expanded format. That's a different pod. That's another day. Mm-hmm. But it creates some serious logistical problems. The other thing FIFA don't like to do, which they've had to do recently, is basically take over the World Cup committee and process of getting the stadium set up and the logistics and the infrastructure and the transportation, because they've been awarding in this smaller format the World Cup to countries that can't handle it. So yeah, that might be where it's headed. But I just say, share it with our neighbors. I love that idea. That'll be great. So all right, let's move on to the next topic. Lukaku. Wow. Lukaku, this is no, like, this is no spike in performance, fluke season. You know, someone all of a sudden can put together a good run of scoring goals. No disrespect to him, but a Jamie Vardy, right? Jamie Vardy, hard to say he's going to repeat what he was able to do in that title-winning season again. Lukaku does it every year. Every year, double-digit goals.
It's getting better,
and it's only ticking up, getting better year after year. Bounced around on loan when he was at Chelsea. Was upset because he thought he deserved a starting role. Jose Mourinho thought otherwise. Jose Mourinho sent him out. And basically, it seemed like the criticism of him wasn't about his goal scoring, but his complete game. Jose Mourinho didn't think he was a complete player yet, and didn't think he had all of the little nuances that when you're not scoring goals, make someone effective and important in a title-winning campaign at a big club. That's what Jose Mourinho thought of him, and that's why he left Everton. Let's hear what his current manager, Ronald Koeman, thinks of him now at Everton.
He's one of the best strikers in the world, and I think the boy is improving in different aspects. I cannot change the boy in how you need to finish the opportunities and score the goals, because in my opinion he's the best, but in other aspects he's improving and what we need and what the team needs, and I think that's really in a good direction.
So, first off, if you want to keep a guy, saying he's one of the best in the world is a dangerous thing to say, because one of two things are going to happen. Either his agent, and all these agents these days, these little gnats that not only get around the ears of their clients, but now of the chairman and the owners and the coaches, and go public, and are these super agents now that have a little bit too much influence and also way too much money for the deals that they broker.
And his is Mino Raiola, one of the most powerful agents.
Exactly. He's a Pogba's agent, Zlatan Ibrahimovic's agent. I mean, he gets things done. So, you know, say what you will about him, and I'm not a big fan of these guys. They're getting stuff done. One of two things happen. Either agents come and get in your ear and renegotiate a obscene amount of money to stay, or begin the process of forcing a transfer. The process of forcing a transfer doesn't seem like it's going to have to come from the agent, because Lukaku said it himself. He doesn't want to stay at Everton. I mean, he's kind of made that pretty clear, that he wants to move on to greener pastures. So let's talk about that idea, if that happens. Is that the right thing for Lukaku to do? So that's one thing let's dive into. The other thing to dive into is, how good is this guy? So let's take that one first. How good is this guy? Is he one of the best strikers in the world? So let's kind of go down a list of what we would consider, PJ, some of the best strikers in the world. And obviously, striker, there aren't many that fall into this kind of category, because there are all these hybrids. I mean, I wouldn't call Cristiano Ronaldo, Messi a striker.
Exactly, yeah.
So let's try to bring it into number nines that can fit into that mold. Suarez, Lewandowski, Aguero, Ibrahimovic, Aubameyang. I mean, kind of, yeah, throw him in. Higuain
scored a ton of goals last season. Still doing pretty well.
Is he in that category? I kind of feel like not yet. You know, I think that he is a remarkable goal scorer in one of the most competitive leagues in the world. But I think there's an aspect about how Everton play, and also the tactics and how the game is played in England, that are conducive to him being really good. So England is a very high-paced, very, very sort of aggressive and I would say reactive
physical
league, where some of the criticism about the Premier League is it's not very tactical. You know, people could get upset about that and make arguments to support that it is tactical, and I'm all for that. But I just think Lukaku has thrived in a certain system, whether it was under Martinez, whether it was at West Brom, whether it's now under Koeman. A lot of the times he thrives in a bit of a counterattacking situation, where he capitalizes on space that is given due to a team possessing the ball and in an attacking posture. I just don't know if he goes to a Real Madrid, he goes to a Bayern Munich, he goes to a Barcelona, he goes to some of these, you know, Juventus, these mega clubs, that he's going to get the environment and those scenarios that he's been thriving in. They're going to have the ball most of the time. They're going to be playing against teams that are very tactically aware, that are very organized, that are very strong defensively. And he's going to have to show the guile, the nuance, the sort of cerebral side of the game that's been sort of the criticism of him that was going back to what I said about Jose Mourinho. It was the reason Jose Mourinho kind of let him go. Now, what Koeman says in that interview is he's a great goal scorer. No one doubts that. A fantastic goal scorer, which is the most important thing at the end of the day. But even Koeman hints to it a little bit. There are aspects of the game he still needs to improve. And that's kind of what he's saying. Back to the goal in situations where you're playing against organized, very, very well-drilled defensive teams. Does he have that je ne sais quoi about, you know, Suarez and Lewandowski and these other guys that have the skill, the vision, and the nous to almost be playmakers? You know, can Lukaku be that guy? Can he one day? I think so. But is he ready for that? I'm not so sure.
Do you think, though, if he were to go to one of the mega clubs, such as a Barcelona, Real Madrid, Juventus, that because he'd be playing with better players than he's currently playing with, no offense to Everton.
No, I know what you mean.
Everton, that could actually make him an even better player.
Yeah.
He could score 40 goals
totally.
This season.
Totally, that's an argument that service improves. The positions his teammates put him in improves. Absolutely. Here's my worry for Lukaku, and it's my worry for any young player that starts to find success, is your agent, this guy doesn't really have his best interest in mind. He wants a big move. He gets a huge payday if he can force it. When he goes to that new club, whether it be a you know, Real Madrid, Barcelona, I mean, if he goes to the upper echelon, there's no patience there. You have to perform and produce immediately. And typically there's another world-class striker there that you're battling with. So right now there's absolutely no one to dethrone him at Everton. No one's taking that spot. If he's healthy, he's playing week in and week out. Everton are trending in the right direction. They're heading towards being a Champions League team, I think, in the next few seasons. Mashiri's spending a ton of money. They got the new stadium coming. If they can keep Koeman on board, sign Barkley, some of these younger guys, Tom Davis coming up, they could be heading where he's going. The problem is that's a big risk. It's kind of the Suarez scenario on Merseyside of Suarez was kind of waiting for the team to catch up with him. And I feel like that's what Lukaku is going through right now. So I would understand why he would take that leap right now and say, listen, I'm good enough to play Champions League. He is, absolutely. And say, if I want to become a world-class player, I've got to get into a world-class team. And Everton isn't yet. So I know I'm kind of flip-flopping on this. I just think it's a difficult decision to make. And you know, another young player on Merseyside made it recently, Sterling. And it was also sort of manufactured by an agent. And I think he made the right move. You know, he wasn't guaranteed to play week in and week out. And by the way, doesn't. He was benched the game before last by Pep Guardiola. But he's gotten better since he's been there. He's playing under Pep Guardiola. He's going to be playing Champions League. He's going to be battling for titles. You know, Liverpool could finish in the top four this year. Jurgen Klopp's a fantastic coach. So it wouldn't have been a bad thing if he stayed. It's just these decisions come along for these young, bright players, and it's difficult to know what's the right decision.
Just real quickly, in terms of Everton's perspective, you just kind of hinted at it. They already have some young players. Ross Barkley's 23, Tom Davies, 18, Lookman, 19, Holgate, 20, Pennington, 22, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, 20. Could this team, if they can hold on to all or some of these players, sort of turn into what Tottenham is right
Absolutely.
Now with these young players?
And
if so, could that be a selling point to get Lukaku to stay?
Yeah. So right when you started going down that line, I thought Spurs. You're describing Spurs. Levy finally giving Pochettino the freedom to give young players the chance because short-term success. Don't forget, when Pochettino first got there, it wasn't all smooth. They weren't playing well at the beginning. And Everton could be that team in the future. The risk for Lukaku is, does he believe that? Does he wait around to see if that's true? Because if he waits a couple of years, maybe he misses the window to go to a world-class team. So, tough decision. Yeah,
hit that one.
I'm getting it.
Perfect
I'm
timing.
Getting it.
Perfect timing.
You know, there are aspects of my game as a Potter that I need to improve, and you know, you have to grow. So Tad Potter's just stay confident in me. Last topic. Moving on to another striker who is in the world class department. Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Let me just first make fun of myself and say I was one of the ones that I didn't say he wouldn't continue to score goals. I said he wouldn't at the clip he was getting at PSG. But I just thought there's no way this guy can make it through an entire campaign. You know, I would have been amazed if he played half of the games. How many has he started in the Premier League? Like 27? I mean, he started almost every single league game.
I'm pretty sure the only games he's missed were because he was banned because of the incident.
Yeah,
with
Mings. And also, he's played in all the other competitions. I remember one day, I can't remember who it was in the Europa League they were playing, but it was the second leg, and they were thrashed the team. They were already up, I think, 3 or 4-0 on aggregate. And I looked at the lineups going into the second leg, and Ibra was in the side. And I thought to myself, what is going on? This guy's 35? Is he 35?
35.
35 years old, playing every game, scoring goals. And going back to your point about if you're surrounded by better players, will you be a better striker? Guys aren't performing well around him. I mean, he's scoring all these goals with a lot of guys that are underperforming. I mean, Mkhitaryan, who I love, who I think is one of the best playmakers in the world, who was excellent for Borussia Dortmund and Bundesliga. You know, Mata, who's been really good, but he's hurt recently, going to be out with a groin injury. You know, Marcus Rashford, Martial, a lot of guys not really living up to things, but they keep trusting Zlatan Ibrahimovic. How is he doing this at 35? Let me give you a stat right now that's going to blow your minds. Absolutely blow your minds, because it blew my mind and I'm still recovering. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, before he turned 30 years of age, 232 goals in 528 games. After 30, 250 goals in 308 games. Holy S-H-I-T. Is it okay for you to spell out the swear word?
Spell,
okay,
yeah,
good.
I think we're okay.
It's holy cow. So, okay, when you get older, you get better. You hit your prime. So it shouldn't surprise you that your goal ratio goes up. But then it's a bell curve. There's diminishing returns. After you get past a certain age, you get slower. You don't play as many games. This is remarkable. How the hell is this guy doing it? Well, Zlatan Ibrahimovic told us what his secret was, because we've all been racking our brains trying to figure out how this guy's doing it. So finally, he took a lid off of things, and Zlatan told us his secret, and it was this.
And it seems like the older I get, the more intelligent I get. Like I said, I feel like Benjamin Button. I was born old, I will die young.
Oh, man. Benjamin Button.
I mean, this is another reason why he's so great, is his personality. He's going to deliver these quotes.
He's so good. He has made the game. It'll be a sad day when he's done, because he has brought us all so much joy on and off the field. But let's just kind of talk about how he's doing it. And it has to do a lot with off the field. This guy, there's the saying, my body's my temple. And he absolutely epitomizes that. He off the field makes it a 24/7 job. 24 hours a day. He only does things that improve his body's performance. It's remarkable. He does yoga. He does karate. He does the altitude training. His nutrition, doesn't drink, goes to sleep at the right times, has a personal trainer that was part of his deal at Manchester United. So let me just tell you, and I talked about it in the last podcast about injuries, your physio is so important to you, but it's always a team physio. You have these remarkable relationships with these people. It is unprecedented that someone's allowed to bring their own personal physio into a team locker room. And by the way, other players want to use this guy because they look at Zlatan and he's, you know, drinking from the fountain of youth. So what's incredible about that is, and Zlatan talks about this and said, I wish I knew this when I was younger. And I'll just kind of talk from personal experience. And this goes back to the last pod. Catch that one about injuries if you haven't listened to it yet. I was a terrible pro. And when I hear him talk about that, I'm 1 year older than Zlatan Ibrahimovic. I have a difficult time putting on my shoes in the morning now. I'm getting stiff sitting in this chair. My career ended at a very young age due to a couple of really bad tackles, but mostly because my body started to give out on me because I treated it like crap. I ate terrible food, Tombstone pizzas. I was out drinking all the time. I was just, I mean, granted, I wasn't, you know, I wasn't risking millions of dollars a year. I wasn't making anywhere near that. So maybe I thought I'm going to just enjoy this lifestyle a little bit because I'm going to have to do something after this is said and done. And, you know, his lifestyle is going to set him up for, you know, his career is going to set him up for the rest of his life. But it's not that. It's not about the money. It's about the mentality. It's about the professionalism. Young kids, if you're listening to anything I'm saying, don't be the idiot that's at the bar late at night or thinks it's going to help your ability or help your camaraderie to be the one mixing it up and boozing all the time. I was one of those guys. And I think back to some of the players I idolized and some of these players that were incredible that did that too and didn't live up to their expectations. Clint Mathis, he was one I talked about on my first podcast about Bruce Arena and the U.S. national team. I idolized this guy. He had all the talent in the world. But, you know, one time during U.S. national team camp, he convinced me to late at night go to Wilmer Valderrama's house in Hollywood to pick up his Aston Villa, go for a joyride, and go to a club that night. I showed up at practice the next day, hungover, terrible, with the U.S. national team. What the what on earth was I thinking? And so guys like Zlatan Ibrahimovic, I hope Rashford and some of these other guys watch everything he does because nutrition, sports science, plyometrics, stretching, yoga, all of these things, kids, you should be doing it nonstop. What you do off the field is 90% of what you are when you get on the field. Zlatan has a gift that was a God-given talent, but I've played with so many players with God-given talent that added up to at the end of their career to nothing because they didn't have all of those other aspects of their game that create longevity.
I want to bring up a player that's actually only 1 year older than Zlatan Ibrahimovic. It's probably hard to believe because of how their careers have played out over the last 10 years. And that player is Ronaldinho. And he's probably the perfect example of what you're talking about with God-given talent. I mean, we remember in the 2002 World Cup, he was 22, I think, at the time, with the incredible free kick goal on David Seaman. And he was just a huge part in them winning that World Cup. He won the World Player of the Year with Barcelona in 2004.
I think he was golden ball at the U17 World Cup. Yeah. I mean, all the way up, this guy was incredible.
He was always, at a young age, helped Barcelona win the 2006 Champions League. And then right around there is where it all kind of started going the steady decline. And, you know, Pep Guardiola, when he came to Barcelona, he was one of the players he cleared out. He went to AC Milan. And it was actually Carlo Ancelotti who said, "The decline of Ronaldinho hasn't surprised me. His physical condition has always been very precarious. His talent, though, has never been in question." And it's just interesting. It's only 1 year apart. And Ronaldinho, we haven't seen in the last 6-7 years of anything relevant. Really.
Let me add another name who's 1 year younger, I think, who was in the press recently for being on England international duty drinking at someone else's wedding. Wayne Rooney.
Yep.
Wayne Rooney's not. Where's Wayne Rooney? So let me tell you my Ronaldinho story. David Beckham's a buddy of mine. He invited me over to go watch AC Milan training. It was the last Maldini training session, and it was incredible. I got to go over there and watch this training session and see that incredible ground that's breeded some of the best teams we've ever seen, going back to the Rigo Sacchi days and you know, Hullet and
Bastion, right?
Yeah, Baggio and all these guys. Holy cow. So Baggio was Inter Milan, though, I think. Was he AC Milan? I don't know. Anyway, Boban, some of the guys. Ronaldinho was the last person to come out to practice that day. 10 minutes late, halfway through the warm-up, shoes untied, with a lollipop in his mouth. And I thought to myself, this was one of my heroes. And this is where kids get in trouble. Even at that point, my career was over. As a mature adult that could reflect on the mistakes I made, I still thought he was cool. You know, I was like, ah, look at this. So cool. Comes out, the bravado. That's not cool. He should still be playing. We should still be enjoying his genius. And you know, he's kind of lingering in these leagues where he's almost sort of like a circus act because he still has remarkable talent. But he should still be playing. And if not for themselves, for the fans that love and adore these guys, give us longer of that high level of performance. Because if you take care of your body, if you're a professional right from the beginning, you can have these really, really long careers.
Yeah, that's what Ibra has proven. Real quick with Baggio, he played for both Inter and AC Milan.
Oh, sorry, I wasn't wrong. I wasn't wrong. Good, perfect.
Just real quick.
Which I am all the time.
We're running out of time almost, but I do want to ask you, because you will have the opportunity to call the match at Old Trafford this Sunday between Manchester United and Chelsea.
Yeah.
What are you most looking forward to in that match, specifically with Ibrahimovic, if we want to go there first?
I'll
still let you answer.
I mean, this is your fault. You forced me past the whistle. I'm looking for how Ibrahimovic looks against the best, arguably the best, if you probably put Spurs up there as well, best back line in the Premier League, and can he make them look average? Can he continue at the level he's been playing all season long? And then next, Jose Mourinho and Antonio Conte. Conte embarrassed him, absolutely embarrassed him in the reverse fixture at Stamford Bridge, so much so that Jose Mourinho went over and basically said, stop embarrassing me. At that point, that's when Antonio Conte was pumping up the crowd after they were already thrashing Manchester United. And Jose Mourinho went over and basically said, that's out of line, you're embarrassing me. So Jose Mourinho might have to watch at Old Trafford, where Manchester United are in the worst spell since maybe the 70s in terms of winning percentage at Old Trafford, drawing games left and right. He might have to see his ex come into town looking great, fit, just not missing him, not missing him at all, with someone else now, having the time of their lives. And if they embarrass him again at Old Trafford, I can't imagine what we're going to see on the sideline, in the press conference afterwards. It's going to be remarkable.
Could get ugly.
It could get very ugly.
Reminder, we did have a nice little chat about Mourinho in episode 2 as well.
Back and check out the Jose Mourinho one. Speaking of Jose Mourinho, was that the second pod we talked about VAR? Yeah. Video assistant refereeing. We talked about wanting it in the game, and it's being tested right now. It was tested in the friendlies, and it's basically given referees the benefit of all these replays that we have, and having a trained referee sitting in front of a computer, sitting in front of a TV screen, so he can communicate to referees on game-changing plays, on game-changing decisions, to give them the accurate information. And do we have Jose sound, or are we just what he said?
I didn't get it, but basically
what did Jose say about VAR?
He pretty much said, so the incident he's referring to was the Everton match where Ibrahimovic had a goal called back because he was called offside, and
the header, which I thought was right. I thought it should have been a good goal.
And basically what Mourinho was saying is when the VAR comes, that will be a goal.
But what's so interesting, I'm glad he's talking about VAR, and it's the subject has never been more in the conscience of the community and in the public discourse. But funny enough, I actually think this is an example of when it wouldn't overturn a decision, because VAR, in order for it to work, and I used sort of hyperbole and exaggerated examples of 10 yards onside, 10 yards offside, the video evidence has to be irrefutable, has to be clear to reverse an on-field decision. And that video doesn't exactly give you a clear idea of, was that the right call? Was that the wrong call? It's one of those borderline calls where you have to let the decision on the field stay. But VAR is in the public. We're talking about it. Maybe, hey, in your reviews, when you say you love us and you want to hear more of us and you put your fun movie reference in, maybe just a little line on, do you think video refereeing is needed in the game? Or hit me on Twitter. I'm at Kyle Martino. And that's the pod. That's a dive for today. And thanks for coming along. Thanks for listening. Remember, Tad Potters, stay on your feet.